This episode of the Wired.co.uk podcast is supported by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. Stay tuned for details of how to get a 10% discount.
Coming up today, Facebook has celebrated its 10th birthday. We look back at some of the company's biggest milestones, the good, the bad, and the ugly. We'll also be talking about Microsoft's new CEO, David Cameron's announcement that members of the public aren't that bothered about Edward Snowden's revelations of mass surveillance, and we'll discuss the creepy AI that you can use to talk to your loved ones after you've died. All that and more coming up. Wired.co.uk podcast, your weekly guide to the important and the interesting, from science and tech to creepy AIs and GCHQ hacks. I'm your host, Olivia underscore Solon, and I'm the deputy editor of Wired.co.uk.
I'm Liat Clark.
And I'm Katie Collins.
Well, 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 it's another all-lady podcast.
A lady fest.
Which is pretty awesome, I think, particularly for a tech slash science
Yes.
web publication.
To whoever made a comment on Twitter that it was a male-heavy office the other week.
Yeah, we had a sort of outrage when I took a picture of people seeing the new... Nate was getting the new Mac Pro, and there was a massive gathering of Wired staff members. And unfortunately, it was all men. Some of the girls were actually obscured by the giant men in the front of the frame.
And we're just not as fame hungry.
Yeah. Yeah, and we got some criticism that, you know, wasn't very representative. We're the ladies of Wired. We were out all reporting as opposed to fanning around in the middle of the office, which the guys were doing. Nate is busy at the moment. He will be back next week. And we're going to be talking about Facebook at 10 later on in the show. And I'm just thinking, how old does that make you feel?
Really old, because I always associate joining Facebook with joining university.
Yes.
Which in my head doesn't feel that long ago, but actually now I think about it, it was quite a long time ago. Yeah. Really.
Yeah. I'm so glad you said that, because I thought I was going to reveal my age, but I also associated with joining university.
I associated with the end of university.
I think it's because
not after university.
Yeah, I think it's because it was that thing where you had to be a member of a university, yes, have a university email address to join up. So I think we all knew about Facebook and we were really excited that we would be able to join, yeah, when we got our university.
But it took
email
a while.
Addresses.
I remember my friend at St Andrews University getting it first.
Okay, well, we'll be talking about Facebook later on in the show. But first up, we've got some news. The first piece is that after months of deliberation, Microsoft has a new CEO, and it's not Stephen Elop, is it, Katie?
No, it is not. So after much humming and hawing, Microsoft has finally decided upon a replacement for Steve Ballmer. The company flirted for a little while with the idea of hiring an external candidate like Stephen Elop, who was in the running.
And that's Nokia's...
Yeah, Nokia's CEO, yeah. Who will kind of be incorporated into Microsoft anyway, as part of the Nokia Microsoft merger. But in the end, they settled on an internal candidate, Satya Nadella. Satya has been with the company for 22 years, and he is kind of known for his role in the rise of the cloud and enterprise group within Microsoft. People seem pretty pleased with the decision. He's got a reputation for having a firm grasp of both the technical side of the business and also the business side of the business. And he has a reputation for kind of innovation within the company and pushing it in new directions. He's said to be quite Gates-like, probably quite good timing, as Bill Gates is also stepping down from his role as chairman of the board of directors of Microsoft. He'll continue to advise Microsoft and Nadella. I think he said he'll have something like a third of his time available.
Okay. The rest will be on saving the world.
Yes, obviously. The work that Nadella's previously done has kind of underpinned a lot of the growth of sort of products like Skype, Bing, Xbox Live, and he really understands the company culture. So I personally will be sad to see the back of Ballmer, as he is such a boisterous chap and always a pleasure to watch on stage. But yeah.
We haven't yet seen, well, I haven't seen Nadella on stage. I'm sure he has been on stage. So we look forward to his boisterous antics there. He'll have to take up some of that. The next piece of news that I wanted to talk about was the fact that David Cameron has said that he doesn't think that Snowden's revelations have had a big public impact. This is despite widespread condemnation in the media of the surveillance tactics that have been used by international security agencies. He was speaking to a joint committee on the national security strategy, and he said these words: "I think that the public reaction, as I judge, has not been one of shock horror, but one of intelligence agencies carry out intelligence work. Good." It looks like Mr. Cameron hasn't actually seen the YouGov poll, which was from last year, which showed that 56% of people think what Edward Snowden did was the right thing, and 27% of people only think that he did the wrong thing. And I think there was more than 50% of people who didn't think that he should be prosecuted. And I don't know, I feel as though this represents a bit of a kind of complete misunderstanding of how people feel about these things. I mean, this is, for me, one of the biggest stories. I know we are within the tech industry and we are in the media industry, but this is one of the biggest stories of 2013. And to say that this wasn't significant to members of the public is disingenuous.
Yeah, automatically you think, how out of touch can someone be? But then I actually remembered a couple of people I know on Facebook commenting at the time, oh, big deal, you know, like, we knew they did this anyway, why is everyone getting their knickers in a twist kind of thing? And I remember being really shocked, thinking, I can't believe they're saying that. So perhaps he's talking about those people that read the headlines and move on and haven't actually read what has happened, what's been done, the extent of it, and, you know, an in-depth look at what's been happening.
The reason people might think this is because of crime dramas. And interestingly, this is something that David Cameron used to support his argument as to why we need more surveillance within the UK. He was trying to talk about the need to modernise legislation around communications data. There was the very unpopular Communications Data Bill, which has been known as the Snooper's Charter. And they're trying to change the law so that law enforcement can track communications in real time without a warrant. Currently, law enforcement can get a warrant and access things like telephone. They can kind of tap a phone or a mobile phone, but they don't have that same authority to look at things like social media, VoIP services, gaming, messaging services, WhatsApp, etc. And they want to get access to that. So in order to support this argument, he said, there's hardly a crime drama where the crime isn't solved without using data from a mobile communications device. As if the fact that, you know, things popularized in TV shows occur means that we should be okay with it, which is ludicrous, because it would, you know, if we could extend that to all sorts of ridiculous conclusions. Mm. So, David, I don't think the fact that it's appeared in, you know...
No. I feel as though he thinks we're all idiots.
Yeah.
Like, we don't read. We're not informed. We just watch whatever that UK spy drama is. Spooks.
Yeah.
And also, we're kind of helpless to do anything about it. I think maybe he's interpreted, you know, it's not like we could just all opt out and protest, but that's not a realistic thing. Like, there's no... Like, the way that he's choosing to judge this, I think it does show a massive disconnect there.
Yeah, he's portraying it as a fact of life, a fact of security, not as a debate or issue, a moral issue.
It's been presented to us as a fact.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, that is surely one to be continue to be debated. And I think the Communications Data Bill generally, we're likely to hear much more about this year. The next story we're going to talk about this week will reinforce how little impact Edward Snowden's revelations have had, because it's another story that's come directly from the documents that he leaked. Katie.
Yeah, that's right. So hacker collectives Anonymous and LulzSec have both been the targets of cyber attacks by the UK government spy agency GCHQ, according to a report by NBC News. So the evidence of this attack was discovered in a PowerPoint presentation that was within the documents passed by Edward Snowden to Glenn Greenwald, who helped put this report together. Now, the presentation had been prepared for an NSA conference, and it showed that there's a GCHQ unit which has never been acknowledged or talked about before, called the Joint Threat Intelligence Group, and that this group had launched a distributed denial of service service attacks to target hackers and political dissidents.
And so how successful were these attacks?
So GCHQ claimed that they successfully scared away 80% of users from anonymous chat rooms, and that they also successfully targeted individual hackers. One slide in particular within the presentation details how agents also used Facebook, Twitter, email, Instant Messenger and Skype to contact hackers with this message: DDoS and hacking is illegal. Please cease and desist.
Presumably it's only illegal if you're not GCHQ.
Well, apparently so. One of the hackers that GCHQ targeted was Jake Davis, who is known within the hacking community as Topiary. He was subsequently arrested and charged with, I think, conspiracy to commit DDoS attacks. He spoke actually at our Wired 2013 event last autumn, and he's got there's a great video of him online talking about his arrest and what happened to him. Surprisingly, he wasn't terribly pleased to hear that GCHQ itself had been mounting DDoS attacks. He's written an opinion piece for the International Business Times, and he also tweeted today, said, "I pled guilty to 2 counts of DDoS conspiracy, and to my face, these GCHQ bastards were doing the exact same thing."
It is one of those cases where things are illegal for you and me, but if there's supposedly, you know, a threat of terrorism or, you know, serious crime, yeah, suddenly the legalities become a bit more flexible.
Such as murder and torture.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, we won't get into that, but that's another debate altogether. Mm. So has GCHQ responded to these allegations?
GCHQ has said it's a long-standing policy that we do not comment on intelligence matters, but it has reiterated its kind of stance that everything it does is kind of within the law, and it said all of GCHQ's work is carried out in accordance within a strict legal and policy framework, which ensures that our activities are authorised, necessary and proportionate. And it says that it's rigorously overseen by various kind of government agencies and authorities and committees. But it's not really done anything to explain, you know, why the DDoS attacks, which it was attempting to tackle, that they were the illegal acts that they were prosecuted for, these hackers.
Yes.
Why it's okay for them to mount these attacks themselves.
Well, I guess it's a defensive mechanism to prevent them from doing their own attacks.
It would be good to hear them explain that, I think. But
it would be, but I don't think they are going to. The final story this week before we get on to our discussion session is a creepy AI that will take on your personality and talk to your loved ones after you die.
Yeah.
Liat.
We all want that, don't we?
Do we?
No,
this is
I don't.
Episode of Charlie Brooker's Black Mirror.
Yes. Almost very exactly. Similar. Very similar. And this kind of follows on, I think we were talking with Nicholas last week about the desire, like, that we perceive ourselves as immortal.
Yeah.
And this is obviously what that feeds into, all our fears about dying. So the website launched last week proclaiming, "Worried about being forgotten after you die? Simply become immortal." But I spoke with one of the founders, and that this isn't strictly what they are, you know, claiming they can do. They can't make you be immortal, and they cannot mimic you exactly, but what they can do is act as a portal into your digital footprint. So everything you've posted on Facebook, Twitter, every email, and eventually when they have the tech, this company, to do it, every photo, video, all kinds of contact will be incorporated into their AI system. And then you can kind of curate your afterlife. You can have conversations with it yourself online, so through machine learning it will improve, and then friends and family when you're dead can talk to you virtually.
Okay, so this at the moment is pretty much just a concept. It was like cobbled together in a few days by some guys at some hackathon, wasn't it?
Yeah, well actually it was a team at MIT's entrepreneurship development program, which is like a mini accelerator program. And yeah, it's the founder says, "Yes, I've been thinking about this for a while, but then we came together and we've kind of solidified it, and we have this business plan." And it could sound like a bit of a publicity stunt or just, you know, a ridiculous experiment. But one point that he has, which I would agree with, is that you don't after you die now have total control over your digital footprint.
That's true.
Yeah, legally, Twitter and Facebook and everyone, they stand by privacy laws and would say that we must respect the dear departed's privacy.
So they would delete all your data?
Yeah, they would delete it. They wouldn't grant you access. And there's been, I think there was a case in the US of Facebook actually going to court with a family to stop them having access to I think their child's Facebook account, which you can see the reasons for. There must be so much stuff you don't want your mum and dad to see.
Yeah. Mm.
And this is kind of an opportunity for you to tailor what people do and don't see about you, just like, you know, you change your friends' settings or you change a setting for each post to see what you want people to see. So I guess it's like a kind of a snapshot of your life for loved ones, but I can't really understand how it won't end up being something creepy like in Black Mirror and highly disturbing for anyone grieving.
Yeah, it doesn't sound very healthy in terms of, you know, a grieving process that people go through, and it's almost encouraged in most cultures.
Yeah, exactly.
It just seems to sort of delay that in a very unhealthy way by the sounds of it.
But also, how much do you self-edit when you publish? You know, it's not actually the best bits in life aren't generally the things that you are writing into Twitter and to Facebook, contrary to, you know, how you perceive people's lives to be. Actually, life happens a lot of the time offline, you know, with human contact.
And it would be like an obituary, you know, the best pics as perceived by the AI system, you know. And in terms of, I mean, obviously the technology doesn't exist now anyway to have your humor and all the nuances of your personality and things like, you know, if you're chatting to your child, you're going to speak differently than to your wife or your grandchild or whoever, or a colleague at work, and all those, you know, there's no way right now we're anywhere near that.
Also, you know, that I like, as in Facebook like, thumbs up, horses. I do actually like horses. But now I get ads delivered to me talking about my horse clothes I want to buy for my horse that I don't have.
Or equestrian hobby.
Yeah, it's like, this does not exist. So I don't know. I can imagine this algorithmic approach, unless it gets very sophisticated, would be very problematic and lead to that uncanny valley feeling of of who is this imposter who's trying to communicate
with
me.
Which would be horrendous if you're grieving. But it's like the Google's, you know, profile on you. When I was house hunting, I was a middle-aged man.
Yes.
So
I still am.
I think I still am.
Well, perhaps this is one to discuss on another podcast. But if you have any thoughts on this, please do email us on podcast@wired.co.uk. Now, we're about to take an ad break, but when we come back, we're going to talk about Facebook's 10th birthday.
This episode of the Wired.co.uk podcast is supported by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable website designs, drag-and-drop tools, as well as 24/7 support. If you want to sell physical goods or digital downloads, music, podcasts maybe, written work, those systems are baked into every template so you can start taking cash right away, and unresponsive website designs that are designed to work well on desktop and mobile devices. You can give it a go by starting a free trial today. You don't need a credit card. Plans start from £5 a month upwards. And whatever plan you go for as a Wired.co.uk podcast listener, you get 10% off your first purchase by using the offer code WIRED2. If you go for a yearly plan as well, you get a free domain name. So sign up now for a no-risk trial with no credit card at squarespace.com/WiredUK. And don't forget to use that offer code WIRED2 so that they know that we sent you.
We're now going to have our first of two segments, and the first one is going to be Memory Lane. Now, 10 years ago, in a Harvard University dorm room, Mark Zuckerberg set the Facebook live, and it's now been 10 years. It has nearly 1.2, in fact, more than 1.2 billion monthly active users. 757 million of them log into the site every single day, 24 million in the UK. And in 2013, it made $1.5 billion in profit. To celebrate, Facebook's launched a very schmaltzy look back tool. I don't know if you've tried it, which dredges your timeline to create a cheesy 1 minute video of your life on the platform. Mine just revealed that I started life on Facebook with a loaf of bread morphed with a cat as my profile picture in 2006.
You're always cool.
And then showed me a stream of random people I don't hang out with anymore and a picture of me with Tony Blair. So it didn't really touch me that much. How about you guys?
I've avoided it like the plague. I don't want
to. Oh, you should see it.
I cringe.
This
at
is
the thought.
This links to the AI. This is what the AI would take of you. Using the Facebook.
And I can't even face looking at the Facebook version.
I felt like you, and I just thought I'm just going to go for it. Nobody else has to see it necessarily.
No,
everyone's sharing it.
I know. I didn't share mine, but not actually because I'm that embarrassed about it, which I was really surprised about. I just kind of had. It was kind of divided into two sections, university life and post-university life. And there's a definite, you know, growing up sort of from semi-adulthood to proper adulthood thing going on there.
That's quite nice. See, I tend to only put photos from holidays and things. Which sounds lovely. But which I tend to have with my other half. So it's just going to look like I know one person.
Yeah, well, you should do it. We'll have to do it after this podcast. But we thought it'd be a really good opportunity to talk about Facebook. I mean, a lot of people are talking about Facebook. And we wanted to start off on a slightly a negative note. Let's look at some of Facebook's most significant failures. Now, Leah, you wrote a great story looking at kind of timeline of Facebook's, for want of a better word, cock-ups.
Why, thank you. I'm a glass half-empty person, so it came naturally.
And I want to talk about what you think some of the worst things that Facebook has done in its 10 years are.
Well, it's had a lot of ups and downs, and a couple ones stood out for me, and that was where they have basically deployed something horrendously, said it was great, and then just shelved it a couple years later. One of these was Beacon. I don't know if you remember, an advertising program launched as opt-in in 2007. It tracked your behavior outside of Facebook and would say things like, hey, Liv, Leah just bought this piece of crap online. Would you like it? Are you interested?
Nope.
Exactly. So as you can imagine, people were a bit irked. Then they found out it was running even when you weren't logged in. And even when you opted out, it was still running. So one of the first lawsuits was Lane versus Facebook, which was one of my favourites because it cited a man trying to buy a diamond ring for his wife, which was then shared like 1,000 people, and including his wife. He's just bought this ring.
Oh dear. But it got shelved.
Yeah, it got shelved. And a similar thing has happened with sponsored stories. Facebook got sued for $20 million for using users' likeness without permission. Then it promptly changed its terms and conditions, terms of use, to say, we are going to use your likeness however we want.
Then that didn't wash.
No. A few lawsuits later, it's finally shelved and it's dropping it in April. So that's one of my favourites. But also, breastfeedings, anyone?
I remember that.
Yeah.
Oh, what? As in that they start? They basically ban pictures of breastfeeding, but will show pictures of a video of beheading.
Yeah, exactly. And one of my favourite conversations with people with Facebook was the description of what is and what isn't allowed, which was basically no nipple. Baby's head can cover nipple. Baby can be using nipple, but no nipple.
But man nipple's okay. Lady nipple, not okay. Yeah. Beheading, okay.
Yeah, as long as you're condemning it, Liv.
As long as you don't like it. But what if you like it?
Well, I think enough people have to like it. Well, actually, everyone likes it because that's all you can do.
Because you have no other option.
Yeah.
Katie, what are your favourite mess-ups, I will say now, from Facebook?
So my favourite one of all is the great privacy debacle.
Which one?
The great one. In December 2009, when, as an early surprise Christmas present, Facebook launched its new privacy policy, which basically said you can no longer have a private friends list, you can no longer have a private fan page, and also, you know, lots of people used to have as their profile picture just the kind of generic... on Twitter, it would be the egg.
Yeah.
But they had the generic thing if you were trying to view their profile and you weren't their friend.
Yes.
And you weren't, you had to show your profile picture to everyone. And that wasn't even just everyone on Facebook. It was even people without accounts. It also changed everyone's privacy settings so that they were sort of default set to everyone can view various things. So they introduced loads more options, but they were all, you know, say you had like things set to, only my friends can see this.
Yeah, or, they didn't map it and they didn't make it that clear how to change it until there was a huge furore.
That's what was classic Facebook in this thing, that they waited for the rage, judged it, said, hey guys, this is going to make your privacy better because we've given you loads of settings, and then eventually explained it, in a way that everyone would hear about it.
But, you know, the point was, you know, some people went for a while without even realizing that this had happened. Who knows, maybe some people still haven't.
Yeah, I would have thought most people went a while without realizing because it was only, I can't remember when it was, when they put it really prominently on the homepage.
And they really encouraged people to look at it. The other thing that I've picked out is the bug that was found last year by a security researcher in Palestine. And he found this bug that basically meant that you could post on anyone's wall, or anyone's Facebook wall, didn't have to be your friend. And he tried to report it to Facebook, and Facebook kind of ignored him and brushed it off and said, I think sent him a message saying, this is not a bug. So he was like, well, I've got to do something about this. So he posted it on Mark Zuckerberg's friends wall, and he was still ignored. So he was just like, right, I'm going to take this right to the top, and posted it on Zuckerberg's wall. As you can imagine, his account was immediately disabled. And, you know, he was told that he'd violated Facebook's terms of service. Facebook didn't really handle the situation that well, because they refused to award him the bounty that usually people would receive if they'd found a bug, because they said that he basically didn't report it through their channels that they provided, which he had, but he'd been ignored. So
I think it was because he was basically using it against a real person's account.
He was using it in real life to prove it.
Yeah, exactly.
But anyway, it all ended happily, and people donated some money to him instead, and he ended up with about £8,000. So,
good. You know. Well, my favourite kind of privacy failure was when, well, actually wasn't even a failure, they introduced Timeline and everyone thought they were publishing your private messages, but actually it just turned out that everyone was really embarrassing and when they first started using Facebook, and you could suddenly see these messages from 2006 when you were a complete loser.
But that was another case of doing something without explaining it.
True. But the next thing I wanted to talk about was awkward Facebook rites of passage that everyone goes through. Now, this is a story that I actually wrote, and it was trying to think back over the years of using Facebook, and there are certain things that everyone goes through which are really embarrassing or awkward. Now, my one, that to give you an example of what I'm talking about, was in the early days of Facebook. You know, I think I started off and I basically spent most of the time stalking exes, as you know, what else is Facebook for? But then there was that one day when someone posted a link to what they said was a stalker app that would reveal like who's been looking at your profile the most. And I can remember that horrible sinking feeling that the ex would have seen, like, you know, 300 hits from Olivia Solon. And I was just terrified, and I basically avoided his profile for you know, many weeks, until I found some other article that said it was a hoax and they don't actually
work. Did
you
go back on it then?
Then I went straight back on. But I freaked out.
I look at the weirdest people's profiles.
I think that's part of the nature of Facebook.
Yeah, exactly.
Though,
you end up looking, like, reading someone's stuff, and then you're interested, and then, oh, where's that photo? And then you find yourself looking at someone's brother's cousins, and you're like, that would be really, really weird if they found out. Mm.
When I first joined Facebook at university, it was one of those things where you kind of jump on board, and then you excitedly go around seeing what everyone else is doing, and you sort of think, oh, I'm going to do that too. So I ended up joining loads of really pointless groups, such as the one with the pillow, with the cold side of the pillow.
Oh, God,
I totally joined that. Who doesn't?
And
like,
I was
the cold
also
side?
Definitely a member of a group that was called something like, I go out of my way to step on that crunchy looking
leaf. Oh no, yeah, that one was really popular.
Yeah, and in fact, I looked back just before this podcast to see if I could find any others, and I seem to have unjoined all of the groups that I used to be a member of. At some point, I must have just gone through and been like, nope, 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 you're
an
idiot.
That was very good of you.
Yeah. I don't remember when that was, but I'm glad I did. I think I might even have started a couple of groups.
Yeah.
You know, like, it was one of those, like, in, you know, like if you had like an in joke with some friends and then you would,
it's like a five person group,
create a group around it, and it would all be very funny for you and no one else,
so everyone else on Facebook can feel like losers, not in the know.
And and also lots of groups that associated me with really terrible student club nights.
That's okay. I don't think that's that embarrassing. I mean, it is, that's a rite of passage. I think it's worse, the crunchy looking leaf. Leah, what's your most sort of embarrassing or awkward rite of passage that you've been through?
Well, I think I can empathise with all of you, but also finding that other inbox.
Yes.
The mysterious other inbox that no one told me about.
Now, this is when they changed the messages on Facebook and divided out, you know, contacts you know into your main inbox. And then if you go into your messages, there is a separate folder that most people don't see if you're not looking for it, which is labeled other, and that's where people who aren't already friends with you will get in touch, and sometimes groups and messages and stuff like that.
Do you know what I found not long ago, in fact, Olivia, a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah,
an invite to your birthday in like 2009 or something.
Yeah, I think it must have been a group that you didn't join but you were invited to that then was kind of spamming.
Well, I'm really sorry I missed your birthday. Well, I found out about it a few years late.
So, right, but yeah, that's definitely something. And
it
actually
happens every year, though, so it's fine.
Yeah, but then when I wrote this story, there was loads of people on Twitter who were like, there's an other inbox.
No!
Oh, my goodness. Obviously, people hadn't been
through
that
right. They have that joy ahead of them.
Indeed.
It's actually good for filtering out complete weirdos, though. I came amongst, like, the complete strangers. There were also, like, weird people from my past.
Oh, right.
That haven't met since I was 10 or 15 and met them once.
Mine's mostly creepy men, and then there's like a job offer and something, and then a really cool invitation that you've missed.
Yeah.
And then the other, you know, the rest of it's just weirdos. What do you think are the most important Facebook rites of passage? I mean, you can check out the story that we've got online, but send us your own if you don't think there are more. I mean, others include playing Farmville and writing someone's name into as a status update instead of searching for them. That's a killer.
Ed Balls. Ed
Balls, yes, obviously popularised that on Twitter. But let us know, podcast@wired.co.uk. Now, our final segment today is going to be WWWTF.
What the?
And this is a dear MP, Claire Perry, who seems to have the answer to everything when it comes to problems online. Liat.
Right, Claire Perry. She is the MP with the most special title, Special Advisor to the PM on Preventing the Sexualisation and Commercialisation of Childhood.
That's a big job.
Yeah, i.e. Protector of Innocence. I heard her speak at an event last week where she confirmed everything we feared, and that's that she doesn't seem to know a lot about the internet and how we use it.
Brilliant.
Amongst her statements were, ISP filters do not overblock content.
Okay, despite the fact that loads of kind of sexual health websites have been blocked.
Yeah, and there's been many reports about this. She said we just have to use them to make them stronger. And I must say that 2 days later, it was made all the more embarrassing when the government announced, hey guys, we've been overblocking content.
Oh.
We're going to try and solve this problem with
Awkward.
A whitelist. Yes, that was embarrassing. So what else does she say? She said, she said that we couldn't make ISP filters opt out because of all that pesky freedom of speech stuff. We can't force people to do it, which was originally what she wanted to do.
What?
Opt out the ISP filters.
Oh, as in opt. Okay, you can't make them opt out. As in, you, or as opposed to you.
Oh,
can't
sorry,
opt out
you can't make the filters
yes,
opt
okay,
out.
Okay, right.
Can I say that again?
Fair enough.
Also, if you're worried about cyberbullying, just ban phones in schools.
And why don't you ban the post and, you know, the telephone while we're at it?
Yeah, magazines, books,
yes.
The world, just everything. I think
and
she's
those little pieces
of
paper of that people
things.
Throw around classes, we should ban those as well.
Yeah. Well, better yet, a teacher probably in class can see when someone's crying in the corner or someone's on their phone all day, and they'll just take the phone off them like they do those pieces of paper when we were kids. When I was at the event, everyone in the room kind of went nuts when she said that. The room largely being filled with people from children's charities and schools, and they all said how ridiculous this was and pointed out this stuff happens at evenings, weekends, education should be the solution.
So what was her answer to that?
She doesn't answer things like that.
Did she say turn the router off at night?
Oh yes. it was so ridiculous. I blocked it out of my mind. She said, what are you all complaining about? Parents who say that they can't get their children off the internet, turn the router off at night. Because, you know, kids don't have mobile phones.
No, and also the internet isn't useful for anything else apart from bullying.
Like learning. One of a teacher who actually stood up and she challenged him and said, do children have mobiles in school? And he says, we only let them use them for in context of doing coursework, you know, in sessions where they're doing coursework.
Yeah.
And that was when she said, well, mobile phones should be banned in school. This is a teacher telling her, these are the select instances where we use it. And she's just, you know, completely missed the point all the way through. And I think that the last one was a quite sensitive topic because it was the same week the news of the inquest into the teenager Tallulah Wilson was finalised, and she took her life after being banned from Tumblr the same week by her mother. And one person commented, take away their devices and they really will kill themselves, which is I did not think an appropriate thing to say in that context. But their point was, like, you know, this is a ridiculous, ridiculous solution. The only way to kind of to stop people accessing, or hopefully encouraging them not to access harmful content, is through education.
Yeah.
Learning
how to use these tools effectively and politely as opposed to banning them immediately.
Especially considering, you know, more and more they're talking about using tablets in classrooms and things like this. Like, they are educational tools. They are tools by which people will increasingly access education.
Yeah.
So,
and when that's the default, then it becomes the norm, then you're not going to be constantly on the porn, probably.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, it's quite worrying that this is the woman in charge of, has, you know, quite a significant role at the moment in amongst all this kind of hype about protecting the children.
Yeah. She so badly doesn't want to be perceived like that, but that is every time she gives interviews, this is how she sounds. Like, yeah. I read an interview with her from The Telegraph, and it was when she was trying to do an all-out block on porn, internet porn, just to get rid of it.
Again.
And she blamed it on the blokes. She said, God. Women wanted it, but blokes will be blokes. And they basically said no.
Oh dear.
So this is the woman protecting your children.
Well, we're trying to get hold of Ms. Perry so we can interview her, but she's not being all that forthcoming. So if anyone does know her and wants to put us in touch, we can perhaps have a very sensible debate about it, because it's a really important issue, and obviously, you know, it's important to protect kids, but is this the right way of going about it? What are your thoughts? Tell us on podcast@wired.co.uk. That's just about all we've got time for this week. So yes, if you have any feedback, let us know, but otherwise we will see you next week. Bye.
Bye. Bye-bye. Don't do that one.
sorry, Nate.